I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, Joey Knight, you were at One Buck Place, or the Advent Health Practice Center, whatever they're calling it now, over at the Buccaneers practice facility and offices there today, as Bruce Arians officially stepping down as the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, moving into a senior football, consultant or whatever position. And Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator, longtime defensive coordinator under Bruce Arians, is promoted to head coach. So the news broke, of course, Wednesday night. We had Rick on yesterday's on the podcast to talk about that. But you were at the press conference today where the Glazer family honored Coach Arians and even announced that he will go into the Ring of Honor this fall. And then introduced Todd Bowles as the head coach, where he said he's just going to be him. You know, the things he learned from being at the Jets last time and what he's learned from Bruce Arians over time. And Bruce even told him, just be you and you'll do fine. And he's got a heck of a team behind him to do this with. So your thoughts on everything that happened today there?
Yeah, it was really nice. It was the quintessential passing of the torch. First part of the press conference was spent celebrating Bruce Arians' career in Tampa Bay and lauding him for his contributions, for the way he just helped change the culture and, you know, even enhance diversity within the organization. And of course, the winning on the field. So I thought it was very nice, even a little poignant. Joel Glazer was the first one to talk, and I swear it sounded like his voice was cracking a little bit when he was talking about Bruce's contributions. And then you segued from that to introducing Bruce's kind of handpicked successor, Todd Bowles. And, you know, a lot of complimentary things said about Todd, about why he's the right guy for this time, and just the way he has endeared himself to not only players, but other coaches and staffers inside that building during his 3 years here. So it was really nice, very appropriate, I think is the best way to put it. Just, again, couldn't have thought of a better passing of the torch moment than what we saw today. This was quintessential passing of the torch. And to top it all off, Steve, you know, Tom Brady made a cameo, didn't address the media, didn't really speak to anybody, but, you know, we all know these rumors are flying and these rumblings about how this was a Brady power play to force Bruce out, and they had a rift and one of them had to go and all this nonsense. And I think this was a gesture by Tom just to honor his former coach and to indicate there's nothing wrong with us. We're on great terms, and to show his support for Todd Bowles as Bowles was ushered in. So just really a cool and nice and sometimes poignant ceremony there today at Advent Health Training Center.
I thought Tom was there to finally take that knife that he put in Bruce's back and twist it. That's why he was there, you know, just to make sure he retired.
You know, it's we were talking about this, you know, before we went on this. We live in a 24/7 news cycle and sports talk cycle. And, you know, that's what butters our bread a lot of the time. You know, we can talk football for 24/7 because there's an appetite for football 24/7. But you need storylines and subplots and theories and, you know, just offbeat hypotheses to fill that time. And I've heard some really outlandish, ludicrous ones about Brady and Arians. Did they have the perfect relationship? No, but no one does. But I think they worked together just fine. Did Bruce do some things that maybe Tom didn't agree with? Yeah, probably. But again, no relationship is perfect. I am sure in the previous two decades, Tom did not have the perfect relationship with his boss up in New England. I'm sure they knocked heads on occasion, but somehow they got through it. I think Tom and Bruce are fine. I don't think if there was such a rift, I don't think Tom contemplates coming back. You know, I heard one rumor, Steve, or one theory. I don't want to say rumor. I heard one theory earlier today on one of the networks that you know, laid it out like this, that Tom played for the quintessential old school coach at Michigan in Lloyd Carr. And then he played for a hard-nosed old school guy in Belichick for 2 decades in New England. And after 2 years of Arians, where Arians was more hands-off than those guys and had a little bit of a looser atmosphere, Brady enjoyed it initially, but kind of wanted to get back to being coached hard and having that rigid structure. So that's why Arians had to go. You know, nonsense, just complete nonsense. Those guys were fine. And Arians brought it up again today. He said, you know, those rumors are crap, except he didn't use the word crap. You know, he said, I want to get Brady out on the golf course again soon. So, again, much ado about nothing. And I thought it was a really cool gesture for Tom to be there, not only to show support for his old coach, but to kind of endorse his new one, if you will.
So I thought it was interesting that they started off the press conference and announced that Bruce Arians is going into the Ring of Honor this season. And, of course, only the second coach in Buccaneers history to lead them to a Super Bowl. It spent 3 seasons here. First of all, a great honor and I think well-deserved. But you and I were talking beforehand, so I'll ask you the question on the podcast. Tom Brady retired this offseason, too. Were they going to put him in the Ring of Honor this year had he stayed retired?
That's a great question, a thought-provoking question. I don't think they do it right away. I think they put some separation between Brady and the Ring of Honor. I think they're doing this now for Bruce. One reason, perhaps, is because he's going to be 70 in October. And while he seems in great health and he has reiterated that his retirement is based no way on health reasons, that his health is fine. The fact of the matter is he's going to be 70 in October. So do it sooner rather than later. Why not? Joel Glazer, I asked him, and he said, you know, if anyone checks the boxes, every single box for being immediately put into the Ring of Honor, it's Bruce Arians. Not only the wins, you know, he's the third winningest coach in franchise history. He'll leave with the best winning percentage. There were 5 playoff wins on his watch, and that's only one fewer than the franchise had in its history before he arrived. Not only that, just because of the culture he helped forge, the diversity he helped foster, 3 black coordinators, 2 female assistants. You know, he embraced that kind of diversity. So for all those reasons, Joel said, again, he said it like this. You talk about guys checking the boxes. Check, check, check. Bruce did them all for immediate induction. So why wait?
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I think it's, you know, he's still going to be part of the organization. That's one of the things he talked about, too. He'll still be, you know, able to go through the locker room, and except this time he won't be the coach. So right. a little more loose there. He said he's willing to do anything that the organization needs. You know, Todd Bowles specifically mentioned helping with the draft is, you know, Todd's done a lot of work on the defensive side of the ball, looking at draft stuff, you know, for coming up in the next month or so. But, you know, Bruce Arians obviously has been looking at everything, so he's going to need his help there and that. So, you know, not only does Todd Bowles get to take over as coach, and this has kind of been Bruce Arians' succession plan since he got here, although, as he even said, look, I thought Todd Bowles would have been hired after the Super Bowl as a coach somewhere. And, right. And, you know, maybe that year it's a little too late to hire by that point. By the time you get past the Super Bowl, most of the openings are done.
Right.
And that defense that year started slow and finished strong.
Right.
And even had a better playoffs. But by last season, you expected he may have gotten a job. And, of course, he didn't, which then allowed the succession plan. So,
And you know, I think that really ticked Bruce off, the fact that his 2 coordinators, though they interviewed, they didn't get a job. They came up empty in this last coaching cycle. I really think that bothered him. I think it disgusted him. And Bruce saw how the planets were aligning. Tom unretiring, which set off all these free agents re-signing, re-upping with the Bucks to play with Tom again. And he said, hey, this team is a Super Bowl contender again. This team is set up for success. The time is right. Now is the perfect time to give, you know, Todd a chance to maximize his opportunity for success and to, you know, to run with it. And he said, Bruce said, this is my dream. And, you know, I love a quote that he had. He said, you know, a lot of people have already asked him, why are you stepping away from a chance to go to the Hall of Fame and win another Super Bowl? And he said, because I don't give a crap about the Hall of Fame. Succession is way more important to me. So this is his succession plan. And to make it even better, the Bucks are in a position to potentially win another Super Bowl or make a serious run at it. So he's got his guy that he's known for 40 years. Todd Bowles played for him at Temple, has coached for him a number of years. He can plug his guy in and give him the maximum opportunities to succeed at this level. And I don't think Bruce Arians could be happier about it.
I mean, he took the job in Tampa Bay on the pure premise of, one, I'll work with Jason Light, who I've worked with before and I know.
Right.
But two, my whole coaching staff was available to come with me.
Absolutely.
From Byron Leftwich to Todd Bowles to Larry Foote to go down the roster.
Right.
All those coaches were available to come with him. Yeah. And his plan all along, I mean, when he was hired here, did anyone really expect him to be here 5 years later?
No.
You've got Tom Brady, and maybe that changes some things. Right. But that's not the way Bruce thinks. And as he said today, he goes, succession's more important than that stuff to me. That I want to set my guys up for success. And he's always been about his guys throughout his career. I mean, and you know, he didn't become a head coach till he was 60. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even given the chance to be a head coach till then. And it was only because of an illness in Indianapolis
right,
that he got to take over for part of a season. So that has been, you know, Bruce is a little different than a lot of guys in that way, where it's truly about the people more than it is the success. It's really the process over the outcome, like what we hear John Cooper talk about all the time.
Right.
But that's really the way Todd or Bruce Arians operates.
Yeah. Dream scenario. He saw the dream scenario playing out. One of his guys could have a chance to win a Super Bowl. And, you know, who knows what Todd Bowles was thinking, whether he'd ever get another crack at this. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a great first season with the Jets, and then the last 3 years kind of foundered. But look at the quarterbacks he had. I think one of the McCowns and Sam Darnold and Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was kind of over the hill at that point, even back then. You know, he didn't have nearly the roster that he obviously is inheriting right now. And I just think this was a dream for Bruce to plug in one of his guys with this roster and just to give him the maximum opportunity to succeed, just the way he envisioned it, like you said, when he arrived here in 2019.
You know, it's funny because we had talked leading up to this about if Tom Brady had not come back, would Bruce retire? Because does he really want to groom and grow with Blaine Gabbert and or Kyle Trask as the quarterback, assuming that was your options if you couldn't land somebody else? And you know, your mind kind of went to, well, yeah, he would retire. Why would he stick around and do that? Except now when you hear him talk today, what you realize is if that's the options here, I'm not turning the job over to my assistants for them to be dealt that hand.
Absolutely.
I'll stay because they're not going to be set up for the success that they need quickly. And not that Blaine Gabbert or Kyle Trask couldn't win games, but you're not a Super Bowl contender this year if they're the quarterback.
Yeah, it all makes complete sense when you think about it now. You know, Bruce talks about, you know, his succession plan that he had in mind and thinking, looking through that prism, it all makes complete sense just for the way you laid it out, Steve. If, you know, if this offense had been entrusted to Trask or Gabbert and Bruce retired then, he's setting up either Byron Leftwich or Todd Bowles to fail. Yeah, I mean, you got to have a quarterback in this league. And who knows, Blaine Gabbert may have come in and overachieved and exceeded expectations. But more than likely, he would not have. And more than likely, all these free agents who re-upped mm-hmm. after after Tom unretired, they probably wouldn't be here either.
Well, we're pretty sure Carlton Davis wouldn't be here. We're pretty sure Ryan Jensen wouldn't be here. If you're assuming Gronkowski is coming back, he wouldn't be here. Leonard Fournette probably wouldn't be here.
Probably not, no.
You know, we know that the team and the weapons wouldn't be what they are with Tom Brady at quarterback.
And so you're setting up one of those two coaches to fail, and that's the last thing Bruce wanted. So, again, looking through the prism of his succession plan, all this lines up. It all makes sense now.
It really does. So Bruce Arians steps out of the way. Of course, he'll still be in the front office and there to help. But now Todd Bowles takes over. And as you mentioned, he had a good first year in New York, a rough last 3 years. Although, you know, you can the roster you could look at and that organization as a whole, you know, it's not like they've been more successful since he's been gone either.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he takes over. He's got some experience in that regard, which I have to assume that's probably part of the reason why he was chosen and not necessarily Byron Leftwich.
Right.
And I don't know if it was ever asked, you know, if Byron was ever considered today. And I'm sure at some point that will be. And I'm sure he was considered. But Todd Bowles has experience. You've got a team that's expected to be a contender for the Super Bowl. I would think that experience that Todd has is a big reason why he's the one leading the charge now, despite the fact he's a defensive coach, which you don't see too many of those promoted up anymore.
Yeah, we talked, Steve, and you raised the point before we went on the air. I think the chances of Byron getting a better job elsewhere are better than Todd's because this is an offense quarterback driven league. Mm-hmm. And so people are going to go after the coordinator, the quarterback's coach. So I think that gives Byron a greater chance of getting a job elsewhere than Todd, who is clearly a defensive coach. And the other part of that, yes, Todd has NFL coaching, head coaching experience previously, so which gave him an upper hand to succeed Bruce. And he talked about, you know, the learning experience of being with the Jets for 4 years. He said, you know, there are a bunch of holes in that dike, and I was trying to fill 50 holes with only the 10 fingers that I have. And it kind of, to me, when he said that, it sounded like a young Bruce Arians, because if you've watched documentaries on Bruce, either on NFL Network or elsewhere, he talked about being a young head coach at Temple and just not delegating, micromanaging, and trying to just do every task. You know, just not entrusting his assistants and his staff with responsibilities. And he said, you know, I got migraines. I got migraines at Temple. And when they fired me, the migraines went away and I haven't had a migraine since because I've learned how to delegate. And, you know, I was reminded of that when Todd talked about just trying to plug every hole in New York when there were dozens of them. I think he has learned to trust his staff around him. And he's got guys around him he has worked with for years that he trusts infinitely. I think he's going to be more of a delegator. He's not going to mess with the Brady Leftwich dynamic. He said, "I will if I want to. I'm the head coach," and he kind of joked about it. You know, he's got to monitor the offense. He's got to manage games and things of that nature. He's got to have a hand in it. But I don't think he's going to really tamper with the chemistry that Tom and Byron have developed. You know, he's gonna entrust when he has to watch the offense and scrimmage and, you know, and run prep and pass prep, he's gonna let Larry Foote and Casey Rogers, his co-defensive coordinators, he's gonna let them run things defensively. So I just came away with a guy who has learned how to delegate, which I'm sure he learned from Bruce, who knows what the demands are of an NFL head coaching job, and, you know, is smart and savvy enough, obviously, especially as a defensive mind, to put his own wrinkle and his own twist on things. So, again, just a maximum opportunity for Todd Bowles to succeed.
All right, well, some other Bucs news today happened. The Bucs re-signed a quarterback, but it was not Blaine Gabbert. Ryan Griffin is back. So now they have, what, three quarterbacks under contract, Tom Brady, Kyle Trask, and Ryan Griffin. So is he just a camp guy, or what are they seeing with Ryan Griffin there?
That's the great question. That's the prevalent question, Steve. Are they, you know, typically they've had four quarterbacks in camp, and Jason Light has said they're going to explore all options, in terms of a backup, presumably meaning a veteran. He said Blaine. He said Monday, Blaine Gabbert is still in play. That's still a possibility. But is he? Will they go with these three? Do they like what they see enough out of Kyle Trask and his development just to trust him as the Brady backup and being one heartbeat away, if you will, and making Ryan Griffin the emergency guy? Or will they still bring a veteran in to back up Tom? My sense is they will bring a veteran in, an insurance policy, whether that's Blaine Gabbert or somebody else. That remains to be seen. But I think they will go with four. But that said, you got to admire the resilience of a guy like Ryan Griffin. It's a heck of a way to make a living. He's seeking his eighth consecutive year on this roster. Now, a lot of it has been as the number three guy, not suiting up on game days. He was on the practice squad most of last year. He's thrown four regular season NFL passes. But God bless him, he's been with in the NFL for nearly a decade now. Again, he's seeking his eighth consecutive year on this roster. He's one of the elder statesmen, so good for Ryan Griffin.
I'll leave you on this, too. I forgot to mention this. So, Ndamukong Suh had tweeted.
Right.
He says, congrats to Todd Bowles on becoming head coach of a great team that still feels one man light on talent with two eyes popping out.
That's the first we've heard from Sue, which, you know, that tweet leads me to believe he wants to come back. He wants to play. And he's saying, like, hey, Bucks, the ball's in your court. Now, when we asked Jason Light about Sue Monday at the annual meetings in Palm Beach, he gave a really vague answer and just really kind of just sidestepped it. We asked Todd about it today. He was a little more forthcoming. He said they hope to have it resolved one way or the another pretty soon. He praised Sue for the way he cares for his body. I mean, the way Sue meticulously cares for his body and nutrition rivals Brady from everything I've heard in that building. The guy doesn't miss any games. He played, I think, a little more than 60% of the snaps last season at age 34. So the guy's been consistent. He's durable. I know Bowles likes him. And he said, you know, today, Bowles said, obviously, there's some things we can't get into, but we hope to have this resolved. So this should be completed and played out. Maybe in the next week or two, we'll know if Sue's on this roster. He played for $9 million last year. Are the Bucks willing to pay that to a 35-year-old defensive tackle again this time around? I just don't know, but hopefully we'll have an answer here in a week or two.
All right, Joey, thank you for stepping up today and talking to us about the press conference where Bruce Arians officially retires as the Buccaneers head coach and then Todd Bowles takes over. Rick, of course, enjoying some vacation time in Colorado. As he mentioned last night on the podcast, as his son's moving out there. So glad you could jump on today and give us the lowdown on what happened at One Buck Place or the Advent Health Practice Center, I think it's what it's called.
Advent Health Training Center.
Training Center. I got to get that right.
My pleasure, Steve.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we're joined by Ed Encina now, the Tampa Bay Times beat reporter for the Tampa Bay Lightning, who in the final month of the regular season now, 16 games to go, 11 of those at home for the Lightning. As we tape this before Thursday night's NHL action, the Lightning are in second place in the Atlantic Division, just 1 point ahead of Toronto and, 3 points ahead of Boston. Now, they're going to play Thursday night, so by the time you hear this, those standings could change. And they're just 6 points back of Florida. So I'll start with this, Eduardo. With 16 games to go, 11 at home, and the way the division standings are, how do you assess the Lightning's chances at getting, one, the number one seed in the division, which would be overtaking Florida, or do you see them dropping even as far as the wild card? I mean, there's four good teams all within, you know, 8 or 9 points of each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crowded down, you know, down when you get beyond, you know, Toronto and those other teams. So You know, I think it's they're right now they're really kind of protecting where they're at. You know, they're going to have one head to head with Florida where, you know, they can catch, get double the game there. But I think right now it's really kind of just maintaining where they're at right now. And, you know, we saw this last year is, you know, they had an opportunity to kind of, you know, maybe get a little bit better, you know, seating. But I do think that, you know, the whole process of our outcome thing, we've heard it a lot from John Cooper, but, you know, to them, it's less about where they're seated and, you know, where they fit in, where they, you know, slot into the division and more about, you know, how their game is rounding out come playoff time. I think that's what's probably more important to them right now. Now, having said that, you know, I don't think this is a little bit different than last year because I think, you know, all eight teams in this conference can, you know, make a run. So, you know, last year it was tough. Obviously, they had a first round matchup with the Panthers. And that might have been their best, you know, their toughest draw in the entire postseason. But it's going to be another one of those, tight conference matchups that, you know, I don't really look at any of those matchups and think to myself that they're going to have a, you know, it's going to be an easy time for them. So I think that's kind of, you know, these guys, as you know, they don't think too much about their opponents. They think a lot about themselves. And I think that's kind of the way they're thinking about it going into this, you know, the home stretch of the regular season.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird year in the Eastern Conference where really for a month now, we've known the eight playoff teams.
I mean,
it's Florida, Toronto, Tampa Bay, and Boston in the Atlantic. It's Carolina, the Rangers, the Penguins, and the Capitals in the Metropolitan. And then every other team's 15 points or more back. I mean, it's really crazy how top-heavy the Eastern Conference is. And really, you can make a case that all eight of those teams can win the Stanley Cup this year.
Absolutely. I think, you know, top to bottom, you know, I think it's I talk to a lot of people about this, and I think the toughest part for the Eastern Conference right now, who although those eight teams, is they're just going to kind of beat up on each other. And, you know, in the West, you know, it might not be as competitive. You know, obviously, you know, when you look at things, you know, Colorado might be, you know, the top of the group there, you know, shoulders, head and shoulders above. But they've obviously got to win in the postseason. They've got to show that they can get there. But, you know, these Eastern Conference teams are just going to beat up on each other, and whoever makes it out of the East, you know, might have a tough time because they're just going to have to, you know, just getting there is going to be tough. So, whereas, you know, for the Lightning the past couple years, you know, getting to Montreal, you know, it felt like more of the Islanders series was probably, you know, really the toughest, you know, the toughest matchup, the one you had to get through, you know, and even, you know, 2 years ago, that matchup and even some of those early series. So, I think this might be a little bit the opposite this year. It's like you're going to have first round, second round series that are really tough. And like you said, any of these eight teams, I really do think have a shot at, you know, at making it to the Stanley Cup.
You mentioned the process over outcome, and John Cooper is very, you know, relentless in saying that over and over again. The players repeat that mantra. So we know that the Lightning came out of a tough stretch. So they had the 3 week Olympic break, where they had 8 days off, then played three games, had another 8 days off. They headed to a home game, then to the stadium series. And then after the stadium series, it started a stretch of 31 games in 60 days.
Yep.
To start that off, they've played 11 games in 11 cities prior to Tuesday's win against Carolina. They went 5-6 on that stretch, although they did win the last two. Most people would say, and the team, and you heard the team and John Cooper say, they were not playing their best game there.
Right.
But they seemed to get better against Detroit and then against the Islanders. And then they played a pretty complete game against Carolina, even though they trailed the whole game and
didn't
take the lead until they won it in overtime. But where does their process stand right now? How are they happy, or where do they see their game at right now?
So I think right now they see themselves as, you know, trending forward, you know, and they're starting to do some of the things that maybe they did lack during that road trip. And that was a rough stretch, you know, I mean, when you talk about the 11-11, you know, two countries, four time zones, you know, coming out of, you know, the, you know, stadium series game, which was really, you know, kind of a really hyped up game, great atmosphere, you know, for a lot of them, it's, you know, something that they never really experienced, even though this team's pretty much experienced anything, everything. So, you know, right now, I think, you know, they're trying to get back to, I mean, the past three games have kind of shown that they can get back to basics a little bit and kind of get back to that kind of hockey that's winning hockey. And when I say that, I mean that, you know, starting from the back end and moving forward, putting pucks on net, controlling the neutral zone and establishing zone time. And I think that's, what you saw last night's game, the Carolina Hurricanes were probably a little bit fatigued playing on the back end of a back-to-back. They played a really physical game in Washington the night before, but that's a team that relies on shot volume. They rely on, being fast. They put pressure on you, and the Lightning held them to 19 shots. So, I think that's, what that says is that, they had the puck a lot and they had it in their zone in the offensive zone a lot. So, I think those are the kind of things that they're working towards. And, I think a big thing, no matter whether, the Hurricanes were tired or not, is that you need to see kind of the big guns almost, get into form. And I think we started to see that, Nikita Kucherov probably had one of his better games over the past month, probably, three assists. We saw that the kind of player that we're used to seeing in terms of being able to slow down the game, find his teammates. And that starts with, the way he played away from the puck. And I think that's kind of where he got lost a little bit on that road trip. And then some offense from Steven Stamkos and Braden Point. So I think those are the things that in the playoffs, your big players have to play big. And I think that's one of the big things that you saw out of the last night's game, or out of Tuesday's game. And I think, they're kind of building on that. The wins are good, the points are good. But it's also good that you're getting some games against some physical teams. In the Islanders, they played a really desperate team. Like you said, they're on the outside looking in. They've got to win pretty much, almost essentially win out in some ways just to have a chance to get back in. And even then, they don't control any of their own fate. So that's a team that's desperate. And you saw kind of that physicality in that game. But I really do think when you look back at that Detroit game, them coming back, in late in the game and then winning in overtime, that's the kind of hockey that we haven't seen from them in a while. They've been chasing games, killing tempo with penalties. And, I think they're just kind of getting back to playing winning hockey. And, the big thing I think is that's really killed them over the past couple of weeks is just the minor penalties and, stick penalties, dumb penalties. And I know that, they've taken a lot of them and there can be some question as to the discrepancies between how many they've taken and how many their opponents have taken. But when you look at it, you just can't win hockey games with that. So I think they're starting to kind of clean some of that up too. But that's, I think, where they're going. It's just kind of rounding their game into form right now.
Yeah, you can talk about the disparity in penalties compared to their opponent. But, you look back at the penalties the Lightning took, and how many of them would you say weren't penalties?
Right.
Not many. I mean, they're committing the penalties.
Yeah.
And so maybe they're not calling enough on the other team. That's up for debate. And, we can talk about that if you want. But, the Lightning aren't, it's not like they're getting called for phantom penalties. They're taking penalties. And a lot of them in the offensive zone in that. And it puts Nikita Kucherov on the bench. It puts Steven Stamkos on the bench. It puts Braden Point on the bench. And, when you're taking three penalties a period, there's 6 minutes of penalty kill of time that those guys are not on the ice, and that impacts your team.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Boston game was probably the perfect example of that. I think it was either the Boston game or the first Carolina game where, they're taking three penalties in the first, 12 minutes. And, Cooper said it after the game is that, not only are your top guys not getting on the ice, but their top guys are, and they're getting to get into, the feel of the game and the tempo of the game and the pace of the game. So it kind of kills you two ways in a lot of ways. And I think the timing of those penalties, like you said, early penalties, when you're trying to, or penalties like that just kind of kill the tempo. And that's the thing, I think that they've kind of tried to get away from that. And like you said, like we can talk about till they're blue in the face, but I've also seen the Lightning kind of get away with some penalties the past couple of games, mm-hmm. Too. I think it's, whether they're getting more calls called against them or not, they're still committing the penalties. They're still, I think it's one of those things where it's, they've just got to get back to being a little bit more disciplined, And I think that's the way they focus on it. It's like, it's more about them than it is about the other guys. They've always looked at it that way. And, if they can clean some of that stuff up, they'll be in good shape, because I think they believe in their process and their system and their skill, that they can, beat anyone else. And obviously, you know, they can say that because, you know, they've done it before.
You mentioned about the big guns being the big guns. And 3 games ago, they put Nikita Kucherov, Braden Point, and Steven Stamkos together on a line.
Yep.
They've won 3 games since then. And each game, they've played a better game, I would say. They've improved as a team. Is that a line you expect to see to stay? I know in the past, when we've seen that line together, they tend to try to pass the puck into the net.
Right.
Because there's so much skill on that line.
Right.
And it's great to have unselfish players, but at some point, someone's got to shoot the puck on that line.
Right.
Do we see that line staying, or have they learned from that past experiences? I mean, we don't see them often on line together outside of the power play.
Right. And I think that's kind of a part of the reason they put them on there, is that the power play had struggled so much that, you know, just get these guys on the ice together a little bit more, you know, and maybe it'll, you know, eventually the skill will speak for itself. But yeah, I mean, we know that the Lightning are a team that, you know, sometimes they notoriously overpass, and instead of taking shots, and you know, it's that shooter's mentality that they have to have. And I think you're starting to see that. I think last on Tuesday's game was a good example of it. And, you know, I don't think John Cooper's going to break up something that doesn't work. So just break up something that's working. So I think for now they'll keep that line intact. You know, I think that, you know, at the same time, you're trying to find, you know, what's that lockdown line too, you know, what's that third line that they've created with Ross Colton and the new trade acquisitions, Brandon Hagel and Nick Paul, what's that going to kind of evolve into? Those guys haven't played together very long, you know. Where does Anthony Cirelli, a guy who, you know, can play across all the lines and is one of those guys that, you know, you can kind of anchor a lockdown line around, you know, where does he fit into the mix, you know? And, you know, because he's been on that top line too. And the reason that he was on there was to kind of establish that pace, because he's just a puck hound, you know, he's back and forth. And I think, you know, at that point when they did it, they needed him to kind of bring some guys in into that kind of style of play. So I think right now it's working. So you just kind of, you know, keep it the way it is right now. And we know that these lines are going to change. You know, it's still 16 games left in the regular season. So you have some time to figure out the way you're going to do it going into the postseason. And, but, you know, I think right now it's working. I think, you know, the good thing is that for the Lightning is that you're seeing results from those guys. And, again, like you said, the big guys have to play big, you know, I mean, well, you know, those guys are the reason that they made it so far in the postseason last year. And, you know, the year before that, obviously Stamkos wasn't around for most of that postseason 2 years ago, but, you know, Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point have been huge parts of both of these runs. So, you know, you just got to get them kind of feeling good about themselves. And I think Tuesday was a pretty good start.
You mentioned the new trade acquisitions, Brendan Hagel and Nick Paul, of course, leaving the team. Then was Taylor Radish, Boris Tkachuk, and Matthew Joseph to make way for them. So how have they fit in so far, and what do you see their roles going forward will be? I mean, you know, part of this rotating the lines is just trying to figure out where these guys can fit in and where you have chemistry.
Right. And I think, you know, as of now, like, I think that's, you know, the way we see them on that third line with Ross Colton is where they're kind of going to slot in right now. You know, they seem to play well off of each other. You know, they're good forecheckers. You know, Ross is a guy who, you know, he likes to get down the ice, get the puck deep and play behind the net. You know, those guys are well equipped to do that too. You know, Hagel's a guy who can, you know, it's funny because all these two guys almost kind of have the same kind of stories as, you know, a lot of other guys who've done well in Lightning sweaters, like Yanni Gord and Tyler Johnson. Like, these were two guys who really didn't, you know, they had a lot of doubters coming up, and they kind of proved them wrong, especially Hagel, you know, who was drafted by Buffalo. The Sabres didn't sign him. So he went into the draft again, went undrafted, signed as a free agent, basically was about to become go back to school and become a teacher, going into his last shot at junior hockey. And, you know, then he got a shot with the Blackhawks, but he's developed into a really good player, 20 goal scorer, and really a big kind of part of their plan long-term, because he's a, you know, he's a guy who they can control for the next, I think, 4 years after this. Paul's a little bit different. He's playing for not just a Stanley Cup, but he's playing for a contract next year, and he's going to be a free agent. And so that's his opportunity. But, you know, he was a guy too, very hyped. He came coming up. He, you know, he actually played with Braden Point on Team Canada in the World Juniors. They were roommates, but he didn't really live up to expectations early on. and he kind of had to figure out how to, you know, become more from a guy who was getting, you know, put on waivers, moving up and down between the American League and back, and become the guy that he is, which is a really, you know, a guy who can play a really heavy game, but it also has some skill. I mean, we saw his first goal a few games ago, and he was pretty, he looked pretty good with the stick, like on a rush with Colton when he first scored his first goal. So I think these two guys fit in well. I think they fit into the Bolt label that Julian Breezeball kind of talks about. And they do their homework on these guys. So I think that both of these guys will fit in well. Again, I think a part of it is to see if they can kind of establish that lockdown line against the opposing top lines. And if those guys can find that form, you know, I think this team's got it puts this team in a much better situation going into the postseason. We know how important that is, you know, come the postseason when everything's so much tighter.
One guy who's been struggling at least on the stat sheet for the last 2 months now is Andre Palat. I don't believe he scored since January 11th or somewhere, give or take a few days there. He's not on the top line anymore, not necessarily because of anything he's doing. I think they're just trying to juggle the lines. And as you said, moving Stamkos up there, trying to get their confidence going and help the power play as well. But, you know, how is Andre Palat's game, and are we worried about him? I mean, he's such a key part. In the last 2 years, you know, with that top line with Kucherov and Point in the playoffs, he's been huge in producing goals and assists at that point. So what do we see in Andre Palat's game this year?
Yeah, it's hard putting a finger on that one, because I really do feel that, like, when you look at him, there's nothing different about him. It doesn't look like he's, you know, a step slower or anything like that. I think the strength to Andre Palat's game, though, is that his positioning, and he always kind of finds a way to be right in the middle of the action. And when he's doing that, he's successful, and he just kind of hasn't been there. You know, like, there's a lot of games when, like, you kind of wonder, like, where's he been? And that's very unlike Andre Palat, because he's almost, like you said, it seems when he's going well, and what we're used to seeing with him is that he's in the middle of everything. He just figures out a way to get there. And, you know, I do think that working on a line with Killorn and Cirelli, as he has been, you know, the past few games, will help him. You know, those are two guys that, you know, like you said, with Cirelli, they kind of bring you in a little bit. But yeah, he's definitely got to get going, because, but, you know, we saw this a little bit last year with Cirelli. You know, like, he had, I think, going into the last, you know, week of the regular season, I think he had something like a 20 goal, drought. And I think Palat now is at right around 21, 22, 23, something like that. But, yeah, I mean, so you see this going in down the stretch. You know, guys do get tired, they get fatigued, they get frustrated. So, but Andre Palat, you know, that's one that it's really tough to put a finger on, because you look at it, and other than him not being around the puck and around the action quite as much as you always do see him do, and, like, this is a guy who still does all the little things. You know, the puck battles in the corner. You know, he's technically so sound, but you know, he could be a physical player too, but, you know, the goals and stuff like that. And I haven't heard anyone really, you know, say that his game's declined or anything like that. And again, he is doing all those little things, and he's just not finding the goal. So, I mean, and that's what John Cooper said, is, you know, it's kind of going back to the whole cliche of process over outcome. And, you know, it's a way you're playing away from the puck that'll get you goals, and that, you know, maybe especially when you're going through a drought like this. So, you know, they definitely need to get him going. I think that helps them, especially with how big he's been in the postseason and how much of a big presence he is on this team. So, but yeah, that's a tough one to really kind of pinpoint, but he's definitely got to get going.
If memory serves me correct, I think Yanni Gourde a couple years ago had like a 35-game scoreless streak, if I recall.
Yeah. It happens. It happens down the stretch. So, you know, it's one of those things that guys just kind of – all it takes is one, really. You know, and it doesn't have to be a great one. It can be one that's, it can be an ugly one. It can be a grimy one. It can be a greasy one. So
remember Corey Perry at the beginning of the year, what, was 17 games or something. And then he scored that one. He threw the monkey off his back, and then they just started pouring in after that.
So. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Perry's a really good example of that is, yeah, I mean, like, and Perry had tons of chances, you know, Ross Colton started slow too. You know, he had tons of chances early on. So, you know, it's just kind of a thing to the season. Obviously, when it gets to 20-some games, you kind of think to yourself, okay, you know, what is going on here? But all it takes is one.
Let's move to defense. And Ryan McDonough, probably mm-hmm. the second best defenseman on this team, maybe the best defensive defenseman that they have.
Right.
Out right now indefinitely with an upper body injury, although John Cooper gave an update on Wednesday that he could return to the ice soon and has been skating. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, he said, you know, Wednesday that basically he's gone back on the ice. He's skating again, upper body injury, so he can still condition. So that's what he's doing. Within a week, he's hopeful. Now, you know, Cooper, you know, sometimes he very much hesitates to put timetables on guys because, you know, when you do that, then you put yourself out there that, you know, you're going to be wrong. So he said within a week, you know, I think that, you know, if you see him, you know, this time next week, you know, that's a good thing for the Lightning. But yeah, I mean, he's a guy who, like you said, he does so many things on the back end that have really kind of stabilized that defense. And he's kind of the heart of it, you know, in a lot of ways. And, you know, we've seen how many guys have missed games for blocking shots. And, you know, I think he has like 110 of them or 113, something like that, leading the team. And he's the guy who, you know, is really kind of the anchor back there. You know, Victor Hedman's the best, you know, all-around player back there. But, you know, without McDonough, you lose one, you know, one of your top left-shot guys, a guy who plays 20-some minutes for you. You also lose a big piece of the penalty kill. So they really miss something without him. Obviously, and your top shot blocker. So, you know, right now, you know, they do have seven, you know, before the injury, they've had seven defensemen. So Cal Foote, you know, draws in there, and he's been playing well. You know, he had a huge block shot in Long Island the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a big play for him in the middle of I think it was a one goal game at the time. And you know, I think you've seen him play a little bit more physically, which, you know, for a young player, you've kind of got to grow into that role. Dad was a hell of a physical player in his day, but like, I think Cal's really kind of had to learn that part of his game, and I think he's starting to do that. You've seen him he's kind of, you know, been up for some of these physical games that they've had, you know, maybe the past couple games with Carolina and the Islanders. So, it's good to see from him. And he's one of these guys who, you know, has been in and out of the lineup. We've seen him in, we've seen him out. You know, he started this road trip, you know, not dressing. He's watching the game up from the stands in the press box. And, you know, sometimes for young players that can help because you can see it from a different vantage point. And I think, you know, combine that with the experience that he's getting, and I think, you know, he's in a good spot. I mean, keep in mind, this was a guy who, you know, once they acquired David Savard last year at the deadline, didn't really play that much, you know, down the stretch and in the playoffs. So, but they're going to, you know, they might need him, you know, we do know that this blue line core has been beat up, you know, whether it's McDonough or whether it's, you know, Bogosian, Chernak, guys like that. They've struggled to keep that group intact. So, you know, he's going to be important. You know, he's going to be an important guy, even if he's not necessarily, you know, dressing every night. He's going to be an important part of it. So it is important to get him some time. You know, you don't want to be missing Ryan McDonough, but it's good to get him some ice time, especially down the stretch here.
A big weekend for former Bolts returning to Amalie Arena. Mm-hmm. Tonight, the Blackhawks in town. Taylor Radish, Boris Tkachuk will make their first appearance at Amalie Arena since being traded. But even bigger, Tyler Johnson returns tonight. He got his ring a couple weeks ago when the Bolts played the Blackhawks in Chicago. But what kind of ovation do you expect tonight? Will it be as big as Yanni Gourde's was back after Thanksgiving?
Yeah, that'll be an interesting comparison, because obviously, you know, both the fans love both of those guys, and mm-hmm. you know, for obviously, you know, well known reasons. And I do think Tyler Johnson will get a huge reception. You know, I think that, the one thing I think the fans really acknowledge is how important guys have been to, you know, the long haul process here, and with Tyler Johnson, you see a guy who, you know, was a homegrown guy who, like, you saw him grow up, you know, you saw him be such an instrumental part of the Lightning as they grew into a cup contending mm-hmm. team, you know, that 2015 year, you know, the triplets and everything like that. I mean, like, you know, I think Lightning fans know that they understand, you know, his role in the history and his role in the growth. So, and the one thing about Tyler Johnson too, is like, you know, especially towards the end, you know, he had been through a lot, you know, like they put him on waivers, you know, they're trying to trade him, you know, He went, between lines. He was on the fourth line for a while last year, and he never showed any sign of that he was, down on it. There could have been disruption from him, but he took it all in stride. And I think the fans recognize that. So, it was great kind of seeing that moment in Chicago when he came in into the room there and, guys who've been around really appreciate him. And it's interesting seeing some of these reunions kind of. Cooper joked around that they're kind of like high school reunions, going back and giving these guys their rings and stuff. And you've got history with certain guys a little bit deeper, but the history with Tyler Johnson goes really deep. And, even for guys like Palat and Kalorn, John Cooper, who, played with, obviously, the veteran guys who've played with a guy like Tyler Johnson, several years in the NHL, in the AHL, and, basically all grew up together. So I think it'll be a really special night. I think it's cool the tribute videos that these guys get and everything like that. I've seen every last one of them, and you can tell that there's definitely a good vibe in the arena, that a nostalgic vibe, but also a vibe of respect that how much these guys really meant to everything that this organization has done the past, seven, nine, 10 years.
Yeah, after the game Tuesday, Jay Retcher, Brian Engblom, and I were talking just about how good Tyler Johnson was in that 15 yeah. playoffs. And, if he doesn't break his hand.
Yep.
And maybe if Hedman and Bishop don't collide into each other during the Chicago series, maybe that series turns out differently and the Lightning actually win a cup in 2015.
Yep.
And, Tyler Johnson was probably the best player on the Lightning for that playoff run.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
Anchoring in the center of that triplets line. And you're exactly right. What he's done on this team and the number of different roles he's taken for several seasons now.
Right.
It's almost like they've had seven top six forwards the last few years.
Right.
And he was always shifting between wing and center and second and third and fourth line. And you never saw any down from him, or, you always saw him, doing what he does, and that's give it his all on the ice. So
yeah, and I think that's the big thing. Is that's why the fans love guys like Yanni Gourde, Tyler Johnson, because of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I'm really curious on Saturday to see how the fans react to seeing Marty St. Louis coaching the Canadiens as they make their first trip to Amalie Arena since he became the interim head coach.
Right. Yeah. That's going to be interesting because I don't think anyone necessarily, in 3-4 months ago, we expected that to be a storyline on that game, So it'll be really interesting to see, it'll be interesting how the reception that he gets. I think that, Marty's another one of those guys that the fans obviously love because of the way he played and the way that, he fought on the ice. And, but yeah, I think more than anything, this is going to be weird for the fans, just kind of seeing him behind the bench, this all kind of happened so fast, and obviously he only has an interim label, right now, but, I don't know how many people, I think this kind of surprised everyone. I think the players that he played with could see him being a coach, but I just don't know mm-hmm. if they saw this happening, so quickly or the way it has, but
and the team's playing a lot better since he took yeah. over as coach yeah. too. I mean, this is not the same Montreal team that started the season with seven wins in the first 50 games or something like that.
Yeah, and he's trying to get them playing, kind of his form. It's buy in, take it step by step and go from there. And but above all, compete. And I think that's kind of what they've been doing that maybe they weren't doing early on. In the season. And, when the season goes downhill, it's hard to stop the snowball from rolling. And, it was a change that they made. And I think it was probably a good one. They needed something to happen there. Now, having said that, that is a tough job. That's like, I guess, the equivalent of managing the Yankees or something. So that's a job that it's a tough one, and there's high expectations there. But I don't think Marty would have it any other way. So as far as the fans go, I think they'll give him a good reception. I think, I think more than anything, it'll be kind of something that they have to kind of get used to, seeing him, behind another bench.
Now, have you moved in a cot or a sleeping bag or something into Amalie Arenas? We have 11 home games this month of April, which is just crazy to think about how often we're going to be at Amalie Arena.
Yeah, not yet. It's a little bit better than 6 a.m. flights on back-to-backs. But, you know, yeah, it's they'll be at home a lot, and it'll be, you know, I think, you know, it's so strange because March was so different, you know, with all the road travel and everything. And, you know, all of a sudden, boom, you're here. I mean, even for us who cover the team, it's like going to the arena every day, you know, for practice and stuff like that. You're like, wow, like I went to the arena today for practice, and I was like, man, I feel like I haven't done this that often, you know, back to back days of, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight days of driving to the arena. So it's different. It's good to be home. You know, it's good to sleep in your own bed and stuff like that for the players and coaches. So, yeah, especially after going on that long stretch, you know, the 11-11 and, you know, that one game against the Rangers that was a home game that really didn't feel like a home game because they were in and out. So, but yeah, it's, and this is, you know, they played well at home. So, you know, this is kind of where you can't really hope for a better situation to kind of be able to play at home when you're rounding out your schedule. And having said that, they play a lot of, you know, tough teams. So there's going to be a lot of barometer games here, you know, coming up, you know, Boston, Toronto, you know, teams like that, the Panthers, the Capitals, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, it'll be a good thing to see down the stretch.
To put it in perspective, there was 13 home games in the first 3 months of this year. There's 11 in April.
Wow, I didn't even know that. Wow.
So, just to put that in perspective. He's Eduardo Encina. He covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. You read him there every day. Ed, thank you for coming on, and I'll see you at the arena tonight.
Anytime, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.